This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
WBBM News Time, 12:03. Great to have you with us for the Tuesday edition of the Noon Business Hour. I'm Cisco Cotto. The Noon Business Hour is presented by Republic Bank of Chicago. The latest on vaccinations at Walgreens is there are some changes to when people are getting their follow-up shots. Right now, the report on U.S. job openings leads today's data. We're joined by Carl Tannenbaum, chief economist at Northern Trust here in Chicago. Carl, kind of give us a thumbnail sketch of what we're seeing here in this jobs report.
Cisco, it's clear that the American employment picture is getting brighter with economic reopening, leading to the reopening of some small service businesses. Many of the employees that had served in those businesses are getting called back, in some cases the first time in a year. And as long as we can avoid a relapse in our battle against the pandemic, the momentum that we saw in the March employment report that we got last Friday and that's echoed in the JOLTS numbers are probably a harbinger of several very strong months that we have ahead of us. So finally, for those who have been displaced from the labor market during the course of the pandemic, there does seem to be hope that they'll get back to work.
Yeah, one of my questions was, is this something that ends up having a snowball effect, you know, where we get a good month or two, and then that's more people working, making money, feeling confident, spending money, and the whole thing just kind of snowballs?
That's well said. I've always thought that the employment figures that we get are the most important ones in the economy, because not only are they a reflection of how things are going for businesses, who, after all, will not add to their staffs if they don't see a bright outlook, but the incomes earned by those newly employed serve as another round of stimulus for the economy. And as we do see employees back to work and earning salaries again, certainly the outlook for consumption during the middle of this year is very, very strong.
So going forward here, what do we need in order to continue it? I mean, is it just literally allowing people to get back to work? Is there something more that's needed?
I think reopening is certainly a very exciting prospect, but there are a couple of things that we need to take very carefully. One, I still think there's a need to respect COVID-19. Vaccinations are proceeding now at a pace of 3 million a day, but there's still a gap in many parts of the country between the goal that we have and where we stand. And as long as the virus is active anywhere, Cisco, it's a risk everywhere. We're still seeing some mutations that are slightly worrisome. But assuming that we can do the right things in public health, we certainly have a window open for people to get back to doing what they did. Now, the fact that we can doesn't necessarily mean that we will, having adopted a cautious mantle. It may take some households a while to get back to traveling or eating out at restaurants or attending a performance. Certainly, as the baseball season's just underway, we have still limited seating capacity available. But hopefully, again, if we continue to control our public health, the economic reopening will lead to perhaps the strongest American economy growth year for since 1984.
Now, is that then an inflation concern, or given what we've gone through over the last year, are a lot of economists saying we'll deal with a little inflation for a while?
I think we need to remember that there's still an immense amount of capacity available in the economy. By some estimates, we still have about 10 million people who were working in January of 2020 that aren't working today. And in a serviced economy, the cost of labor is part of the predominant input. Until you begin stressing that, it's unlikely you're going to see overall increases in prices. So our outlook is an echo of what the Fed shared with us and that we'll see in the minutes of the Fed meeting that will come out tomorrow. Inflation should get closer to its targeted level by the end of the year, around 2%, but the likelihood that it will rage out of control seems unlikely.
Thanks so much. Really good insight. Carl Tannenbaum, chief economist at Northern Trust here in Chicago. Just ahead, Tops, the trading brand company. Well, it's looking to go public. Topps is best known for its sports trading cards. It's set to go public, and it's moving into the NFT non-fungible token sports collectible space. We welcome Shelley Palmer, CEO of the Palmer Group, also host of the Strategy Hacker live stream at shelleypalmer.com/live. Shelley, I mean, it just seems to make sense, right? If NFTs are going to take off, and especially with sports memorabilia, then Topps seems naturally one to get into it.
You would think. You would think. What is an original digital baseball card or trading card? That's going to be the question people are going to ask themselves. It's already the basketball version of this. NFTs with basketball video highlights have almost a $230 million market value right now. So people seem to be willing to pay for digital, what they believe are the original digital representations of these events and this content. NFTs. I always laugh when I say NFTs. Look, we're at a place where the transaction fees to do this, to make a transaction, to mint an NFT, which is what it's called when you create one, they're called gas prices, and they are the transaction fees that accompany a proof of work blockchain. And at Ethereum, which is where most of the NFT marketplaces are written and built upon, gas prices are out of control. You can buy something for $200 and have a $300, $400, $500 transaction fee. It can cost you $1,500 to set up an empty store in gas prices, which is what it, like I said, what it's called when you set something up on the blockchain. So those prices will come down when two things happen. One, when either proof of presence or proof of stake blockchains hit the world, which have happened in small experimental areas, but we haven't seen it on Ethereum yet. Ethereum delayed their Ethereum 2, their layer 2, until July. Once that happens, it will be much easier and much cheaper to do this. I think it's smart of Topps to get into it now. I really do. They are perfectly positioned. And if this is the way people want to collect digital stuff, and it gets to be reasonably priced to transact in it, because once you buy it, you'll hold it forever with gas prices that high. When would a card that you paid $100 for be worth $500 to sell to somebody? Yeah. It's got to be worth more than $500. So it's going to take a minute to get this all in balance. Right now, the gas prices are so out of balance with the prices of the NFTs, it almost doesn't make sense. But
it seems sort of interesting that Disney announces this, right, as they announce that they're – or not Disney, rather. I'm thinking of Michael Eisner because he's there at Topps.
Right.
It seems to make sense for Topps to announce this right before they go public. I mean, that can only hurt – or, excuse me, only help their value because it just shows that they're not just your old-school trading card company anymore. They're cutting edge.
Yeah, you know, look, 35% of their business is baby bottle pop and ring, bazooka and ring pop, right? I mean, they've got a candy business going. They've got a bunch of good things going. I think at the end of the day, collectibles always needed a way to become digital. I mean, let's face it, how do you go to a digital book signing? I mean, I've written 6 books. The first one was analog on paper, and we signed it. So the fourth one, we had to have some printed so we could have a book signing party. There was no way to do it. It was going to be an ebook, and mostly it was going to be on Kindle. So, I mean, this is a wonderful thing. You can have an authentic digital representation that has value. I think people are up for it. The question is, will they always believe in them, and is this going to be a thing? Topps says yes. Let's find out. Time will tell.
Yeah, for sure. And time will tell if those values hold, too. Thanks so much. That's Shelley Palmer, CEO of the Palmer Group. You can find him online at shelleypalmer.com.
This is Chicago's all-news station, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Good afternoon. Thanks for joining us. I'm Cisco Cotto. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM. There's been a shooting on Lakeshore Drive. We'll get a live report from WBBM's Jim Goodis in Travel Tuesday. Millions of Americans are getting the COVID vaccine. More are making plans to take a trip. Walgreens is adjusting the schedule for people getting 2-dose coronavirus vaccinations. On the markets, the Dow down 76, the NASDAQ is down 17, and the S&P is down 4 points. Oil is up 1.5%. Sunshine in Chicagoland right now, 76 degrees. Police are investigating a shooting on South Lakeshore Drive. WBBM's Jim Goodis joins us live now with the details.
Cisco, details are still coming in, but here's what we've been able to piece together so far. According to police, gunfire was heard around Balbo and Lakeshore Drive around 11 this morning. And then the vehicle that was shot at apparently crashed about two blocks north of there. Police are saying that a boy about 3 years old was apparently wounded in this incident. He was initially taken to Northwestern Memorial Hospital, but then was later being transferred to Lurie Children's Hospital in what police say was critical condition. We have no more details about what led to the shooting, what caused the shooting, or whether any suspects are in custody. Police remain on the scene investigating. Reporting live, Jim Gotis, News Radio 105.9 FM.
President Biden set to move up the deadlines for states to make all adults eligible for COVID shots.
A White House official says the president will announce all adults will be eligible by April 19th, shaving 2 weeks off his original May 1st deadline. It's somewhat symbolic since many states have already been bumping up their deadlines as they get more doses. The president's also expected to announce 150 million doses have been administered since he took office. His remarks will come as federal health officials say they're worried about rising virus cases. With the majority of seniors now fully vaccinated, the CDC says younger adults are driving the boost. Sagar Magani, Washington.
A reminder, Odyssey is your new home for all the audio that matters to you. Download the Odyssey app. It's spelled A-U-D-A-C-Y. Listen to WBBM on Odyssey anytime. It's 12:33.
Money Talks as the WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
The Noon Business Hour is presented by Republic Bank of Chicago. Markets a little sluggish. They've been mixed throughout the day, but now the Dow down 71. The NASDAQ down 10, and the S&P is down 3 points. Let's see what's going on. Joining us on the McGrath-Lexus business line, Gary Kaltbaum, president of Kaltbaum Capital Management. You can find him online at GaryK.com. Gary, always good to have you on the show. What do you make of what you're seeing on a pretty sluggish day on Wall Street?
Sluggish is not a bad thing. Keep that in mind. You have to have days where we don't go up like crazy, and we've had some real good days recently. The semiconductors have been on fire, so they're giving back some today. I actually like days like today. It takes the little froth and speculation and the smiles off the face and puts a little bit more doubt. But leave no doubt overall, the big picture still in markets in pretty good shape here.
And to go higher. So what do you do now as an investor? You know, you take a day like today or maybe a couple of days like this and you start reevaluating things.
Well, I can tell you what I do. We're now about to head into earnings season where everybody's going to be reporting. I suspect, you know, and I know guidance has been going up, but whether the reactions are good or not, you can never tell. So I take a little step back and I just wait to see what has the strongest earnings, revenue growth, and the best reactions and take it from there. What I like recently is some of the big cap tech that have been dead for 7 to 9 months finally woke up. As I said, the semiconductors are down today and they're a leading group, but they've had a pretty good move. So we're in pretty decent shape, but we do need some pullback, some, as you called it, sluggish days. It's kind of like the pause that refreshes.
Now, I heard a lot of really good advice there, Gary. One thing I didn't hear was I go on Reddit and see what people are talking about, and then I buy it.
I go on Reddit and head for the hills. Look, in all seriousness, there was some really good money to make if you caught them perfectly right. There has been a ton of money to lose if you were the last one in. There are some things down 80% from the highs that got part of that short squeeze and that dynamic of yapping about the next stock. Just know where the stock has came from. If it has no sales, be very careful. And if it's up fivefold in the last week, there's probably some risk behind it. So, again, be careful and pick your poison carefully.
Do rising bond yields, does that at all impact what people should be considering, how they invest their money?
Well, the good news is yields hit, I think, 1.72. They're down to 1.66. Rising yields are competition for stocks to a certain extent, but they're still very, very low on the 10-year. So I'm not worried about them. As of yet, I more worry about oil prices. You see what's going on at the pump. Over a one-year period, every 10 cents at the pump is an extra $10 billion out of the economy. That's something I watch. But overall, I think we're in good stead. And let me just state, between the European Central Bank and Jay Powell, they're printing $60 billion a week. That's basically going into asset prices, and that's why we've had such a move. Eventually, there'll be a comeuppance, but I don't think we're there yet.
Yeah, really good insight. Thanks so much. Always good to have you with us. Gary Kaltbaum, he is president of Kaltbaum Capital Management. Find him online at GaryK.com. Up next, Travel Tuesday, how the vaccination effort is leading more people to take to the air and hit the road.
Your daily transaction for useful information. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It's Travel Tuesday. As more people get vaccinated, travel is beginning to open up again. Joining us on the McGrath-Lexus Business Line, Joe Brancatelli, editor and publisher at joesentme.com. Joe, before we talk about what open travel is looking like and people actually getting back to it and where they're going and all of that, let's talk about these vaccinations. Do people need the vaccines in order to travel? Is it just suggested? I mean, how's that going so far?
Well, it's going very fractionally and fragmented, Cisco. You know, in many, if we're talking about domestic travel, there is no place in the United States that requires you to be vaccinated. However, if you're going to places like Alaska or Hawaii, testing is required. And I assume at some point, testing will be replaced by vaccination. Internationally, you can't fly to Canada right now. There's no place in Europe you can fly freely to, except for Turkey. So we don't know yet what the rules are going to be, and that's this whole argument over vaccine passports and whether they'll be needed or required.
And if if they don't have something official, I mean, this is me, I'm not taking a position on whether you need the passport or not, but it seems like if you're going to require vaccines, then you need something official, because otherwise, you know, people on a printer could make some of these cards.
Well, clearly, anyone who's gotten any round of vaccination or maybe gotten the one-shot J&J know that the card that is being given out by the CDC was never made for long term, and people saying, well, I'm going to get it laminated, and I advise against that because we may need booster shots. Whatever will happen will be digital, Cisco. So we now have two states that have passed executive orders, Texas and Florida, that says you can't have a vaccine passport. You can't be required. Well, lots of luck to those airlines in that state where if you suddenly want to fly off to some place in the world and that place in the world demands a vaccine, what is the airline going to do? So this could get ugly quickly.
And tell us again, there are already some spots that you can't go to without something, if not a vaccine, at least a test.
Pretty much anywhere that you can travel to outside the United States requires either a vaccine or a test within 72 hours before your arrival. And in a place like Aruba, for example, which has been open pretty much the entire time, you show up in Aruba, they test you right there, you go to a hotel, they promise you an answer in like 8 hours. If you're clear, you're free to go. If you're not clear, then there are issues, okay? We're waiting to hear about the UK this week, about whether they'll begin to open in May or June and what their rules will be. So this is literally a moving target, Cisco. That's why this argument over whether we need vaccine, whether you need vaccines, whether you should get vaccines, and then how to prove you've had one, is all a little premature, except for domestic travel.
I'm thinking Aruba, you know, you get a positive test and you go, all right, well, I guess I have to quarantine for 2 weeks in Aruba. But, you know, it's probably not like you're hanging out on the beach having pina coladas in Aruba.
Exactly. You're sitting in your room doing what you're told. If you go to a place like China, for example, and no one is essentially going to China right now, you will be on arrival taken to a hotel room and you will stay in that hotel room for 14 days. You will have meals delivered to you of their choice. Okay. And if you leave your room, an alarm goes off and you're arrested. You know, everybody's handling it differently. No one is handling it in a way that says, come on in, we're open, pretty much except for Texas and Florida.
Yeah, and so, yet,
you know, what happens in Texas spreads.
Yeah, well, you know, what's interesting, you know, you just hear varying reports, right, of how bad things are in different places and how maybe, you know, the overall rates aren't they're about the same or anything. I mean, it's just fascinating to see how the whole thing has been done differently in different places. So the advice is, I mean, I know the cruise lines are saying that they want only vaccinated people on there, and could they go ahead and do that? That might be one way to get the ships back in the water again.
Yeah, my guess, Cisco, again, this is my guess, doesn't even matter what I think or what I believe, this is my guess, is that I would not be shocked if by the end of the year an airline says to you, you want to fly with us? Prove to us you're vaccinated. And certainly that's the only way the cruise lines think they can get the government to allow them cruises, because cruises have basically been shut down for more than a year because they are, in fact, floating Petri dishes. So it's okay to be in a Petri dish if you've been vaccinated against whatever may be in that dish. So the people, I can't even discuss the anti-vaxxers, the anti-vax certificate people are going to have a long road to hoe, because this is how business see that they can open again in most cases. There's not going to be a lot of situations like we had at the ballpark in Texas last night where 40,000 people are welcomed in come what may, because nobody, almost no one thinks that's a good idea.
Yeah, it is really, really interesting to see. And business is different than the government, too. Yeah. Thank you. That's Joe Brancatelli, editor and publisher of JoeSentMe.com. That's Travel Tuesday. This time tomorrow, Personal Finance Wednesday. Still to come today, Walgreens tightening up its COVID vaccine time frame.
Making sense of your dollars. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
The CDC has asked Walgreens to give Pfizer vaccine doses 3 weeks apart, not four. Ali Marotti is joining us, restaurants and retail reporter at Crain's Chicago Business. Ali, it's always good to have you on the show. So kind of give us the backstory here. What's going on?
Yeah, so Walgreens had a scheduling system that was putting all second doses 4 weeks apart, which is the time frame recommended for Moderna's vaccine. And it seems like the reason they were doing that was so that they didn't accidentally give the Moderna vaccine 3 weeks and, you know, somehow mess that up. So what they're doing now is changing their system so that patients can schedule the second Pfizer shot 3 weeks apart. And that should be happening sometime this week that change happens.
And is this, good news or maybe, I guess, neutral for people with the shots?
Yeah, it sort of depends on your perspective. You know, there's a lot of differing opinions on this, right? So basically the CDC says that, you know, the shots can be scheduled up to 6 weeks apart, but they've asked Walgreens to stick with that recommended time frame of 3 weeks for the Pfizer. And basically the reason that we have these gaps between the two doses is because, you know, that is what was done during clinical trial. So the Pfizer vaccine is supposed to be administered 21 days apart, Moderna 28 days. So that's where you're seeing that discrepancy. And a lot of, you know, medical professionals say that it may not make a difference. You know, we don't know for sure, but what we do know is what was tested in this clinical trial, which is why the CDC sort of recommends going that route. If you look around the world, there are other places that are spacing out the shots farther. In the UK, they've basically delayed all second vaccine doses in an effort to get more shots into arms, because you do get that immune boost with just the one shot. It just kind of depends on your perspective here.
Yeah, and in the end, I understand that the government probably wants to, hey, let's stick with what we did in the trials. Let's not kind of create too much wiggle room here.
Oh, for sure. Let's stick to what we know works kind of thing.
Yeah. And as you mentioned, overseas, you do have this, I guess, different priority. Some people say, hey, getting everyone once is better than getting a fewer people twice.
For sure. Yeah. And it's totally just whatever the public health officials chose to make that approach. You know, it was something that was discussed early on in the vaccine rollout here, too. Should we do this? Should we not do this? And the U.S. has just decided to stick with the two doses, with the clinical trial spaces in between them. So, you know, it's sort of interesting. There's with Walgreens too, you know, they played a really big role in the vaccine rollout so far here in the U.S. They've administered more than 8 million shots, and half of those were just in the month of March. So you can really see how that has escalated pretty quickly. You know, they help with the rollout into long-term care facilities and nursing homes there. And we're just going to be seeing, I think, more and more people get their shots at Walgreens. You know, CVS is also a part of that as well. So there are a lot of options out there at this point. But for Walgreens, it's interesting too. You know, and I cover them from a retail perspective. And though consumers don't pay to get their shots, Walgreens has seen their pharmacy sales grow a little bit in, you know, the past few months, even as the weak cold and flu season sent prescriptions down a little bit. So they're getting that foot traffic from being a part of this vaccine rollout too.
Thanks so much, Ali Marotti, writer at Crain's Chicago Business.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
O'Reilly Auto Parts.